We're in Masilas Yesharim Seder Pikuach. It's been a week and a half, so just to remind you, we're in that version. We're in the Midah of Zihirus, of what's loosely translated as vigilance. We defined that Midah a week and a half ago, and now we're going to go into the parts, Chalkei HaZihirut, the parts of Zihirut, which in your editions is on what pages?
70 in the small.
70 in the small, and?
56.
56 in the large. What? The light or heat situation isn't here. It's never what I expect it to be. Okay. Amar HaChassid. So the Chassid's now responding. Remember, the end of the last section, the Chacham said, okay, very nice. How do I do it? What am I supposed to focus on? And so the Chassid jumps right in. Hinei harotzeh lefakeach atzmo. A person who wants to watch over themselves. Again, right, Mirsa, guarding, right? This is to guard over and make sure that we don't go in the wrong path. Shtayim hinei hashkafot atzichotlo. There are two things that he needs to hashkafa here, literally in like lahashkif, to gaze upon, to contemplate. Like he talked about previously, debonain, right? It doesn't mean here in terms of like a worldview. A worldview in the sense of this is what you're supposed to gaze upon and think about. So there are two things you need to gaze out upon and think about in order to guard yourself properly with vigilance. Ha'achat, ma'u atov ha'amiti shivchar bo ha'adam v'ra'a ha'amiti shianus menu. The first one is, what is true good that man is supposed to choose? And what is true evil that a person is supposed to run away from? That's the first thing a person needs to do, is know what is true good and what is true evil. In the footnotes in the book, he suggests that the Ramchal does not unpack this statement because it's not as strictly practical. I would claim much more simply, I'm curious if any of you have the same thought, why is the Ramchal not going to unpack that statement about defining what is the true good and what's not the true good? Yeah, like, I don't know why the people who put together the Sefer felt that there was a need to explain it. The Ramchal is saying the first thing to know is what's good and what's not. The answer is what's good, doing Ratzon Hashem, and to strive to reach Olam Haba, and to do mitzvot, and all the things that he talked about in terms of Chovat HaAdam Ba'olamo. So that would be my answer to the question of why the Ramchal is not going to unpack that statement, is that we already know the answer, and if not, you can refer back to chapter 2. The second thing which he's going to spend the rest of the chapter talking about in terms of what a person needs to contemplate is, and we've hinted to this many times in many different parts of the Midrashah, Vashinit al ha-ma'asim asher hu olech ve'oseh devar yom yomo, to deeply contemplate, to gaze upon our actions that we do every single day, to reflect on what we do, the actions that we take. And that in of itself gets divided into two. V'zeh b'shat ma'aseh, v'shlo b'shat ma'aseh. That contemplation, that hitbonenut, that hashkafa, that gazing needs to take place both when one is involved in taking action and also when one's not involved in taking any action. How so? B'shat ma'aseh, the time when a person is actively taking action, shelo ya'aseh shum ma'aseh mibli she'yishkol oto b'moznei ha'yidiya hazot. That a person never takes any action in this world without carefully weighing on the scale whether or not this is the right thing to do. V'yir'e v'yavin im tovu, v'yasehu, v'imrahu, v'yazvehu. And to contemplate whether it's good and therefore go and do it, or if it's not good and then don't do it. Meaning to constantly be actively thinking when we're taking actions in this world, is this something which I should be doing? Is this good? Is this leading to my ultimate positive end? Is this leading to my goal of what I'm trying to accomplish in this world? Or not? It seems very simple, but like, it's incredibly difficult. But it's that simple, but it's that difficult. Right? It's just think about it. Is this something which I should be doing or not? Number two. V'shelo b'shat ha'maaseh, when one is not actively involved in taking an action, also to weigh it, when one's not taking action, also to weigh one's actions this carefully. To think, what actions have I taken today, this hour, this year, this lifetime? What actions do I take which are bad and to remove them? And those which are good and to continuously bring them into my life and strengthen them. What are my actions that are tov, and what are my actions that are ra, and to make sure to remove the ra and keep the tov? Fairly straightforward. Again, not saying it's easy, but fairly straightforward. Yeah? Questions, thoughts, comments? Okay. And then I was giving me the time to go forward face. Okay. V'im yimatzei bahem min hara, and if a person finds evil in their actions, yitbonen v'yachakor b'sichlo, eze tachbula yaasel asur min hara haku ulihitaher mimenu. Let's say then you identify negative actions that you take. The next step is to contemplate and to deeply search in one's mind for any type of strategy to move away these negative actions and to purify oneself from them. Meaning, one is to identify, and then two is to actually make a plan, how to make this not happen again. If I know that whenever I, the mashal, right, I'm giving you a very simple example that's probably unrelatable for most of us here. If I know that every time I walk by the McDonald's and I smell the food coming through the windows, I tend to walk in and buy not kosher food, a good strategy would be to find a different route. That seems obvious or simple, but the point is to think about not just what am I doing wrong and then just sit there and feel bad and pour ashes on my head, like that doesn't do anybody any good, right? Sit there and think to myself, why does this happen? Why is this negative thing actually coming about? In a little bit of a deeper way, perhaps, not a deeper way, but to use, Ricky would be proud, to use modern psychology terminology, Dr. Pelkovitz talks about using chain analysis. That if a person knows that they're prone to doing something negative, prone to doing something, especially if it happens under certain circumstances, when I'm very stressed out, when I'm very tired, these things tend to happen. To look at what are the factors that lead up to that negative thing, right? Meaning, let's say I tend to, what I'm working on is anger, and I tend to yell. That's what I want to work on. Not to just say, like, stop yelling. Yelling at yourself to not yell probably doesn't do anybody any good, right? But to think about, okay, at this point I yell. What happens before that? I tend to be really stressed out about my schoolwork. What happens before that? I tend to have an assignment assigned. What happens before that? I tend to skip breakfast that morning. Right? And start taking a step back and seeing what are the domino effects that eventually lead you to that place where that negative thing happens. And so I think what he's saying here, when he's talking about a tachbula, really a strategy, a wartime strategy, how do I, to use, again, a modern psychology term, to do that chain analysis and figure out what's that negative thing that I do, what actually brings about that negative space, and how do I slowly move back, and then when I know, if I didn't have breakfast this morning, I better watch out for my classes, and if in my classes I get an assignment sent out, it's time for me to take a break, go, get a cup of, I don't know, probably not a cup of coffee, get a cup of nice calming tea, sit down and listen to my favorite niggun, space out from the world for a few minutes, just chill out for a minute, and then go on with my day, because I'm probably going to end up getting more anxious and tense, and I might say something bad to somebody that I didn't want to say. An example. I don't know if it's a clunky example or not. I'm trying not to use personal examples, I'm trying to use broad examples, but like, that theoretically is an example of thinking it out and taking a step back and figuring out how to get around those negative habits, traits, or actions. Yeah.
Isn't the goal to make alterations in ourselves rather than alterations in our routines? Like, if you're just...
You're an extremist like I am. Yes, keep going.
Not in a good way. If you decide, okay, I'll eat breakfast today, I'll make it easier for myself to not be angry, that means that you're not working on yourself not being an angry. Do you know what I mean?
Good. So I would say I've only been accused in this room of being too extreme, so I'm trying to take less extreme options and examples. So I would tend to agree with you. For me, my goal would be to dig deep, do the hidbonanut, and find the root, uproot it, drag it out, and burn it. But I'm saying, like, you know, like, that's really what you want to do. You want to get rid of that negative mida.
But how do you do that?
So those are different types of strategies to figuring out, why do I get angry? What does anger mean? Really learning about the mida of anger and where that comes from, both in Chazal and in secular books and whatever it may be, and to figure out ways to start working on that mida personally.
Well, but I mean, like, is that the ideal, or is it that these are just two different approaches? And
I would claim that is the ideal. However, there's nothing, I don't think there's anything wrong with simply bypassing the problem. Mm-hmm. I think it's better to directly address the problem, but if you know that you're not going to, that you're not, if you, as long as you just make sure that you don't go past that non-kosher food store, like, if you don't drive 6 miles out of your way and don't pass that food store, you have no accessibility to non-kosher food. And you don't even have a desire for the non-kosher food. Just stay away from the non-kosher food. I'll give you a personal example, because I feel like this is a safe personal example, and it also is something which many of us can possibly relate to. Okay? I have an internet filter on my computer. One of the many reasons why I have an internet filter on my computer is a very simple reason. I was noticing that there are certain websites that I like to just space out on. Certain websites where I would go on at 10 o'clock at night and read endless amounts of articles that were no way useful in terms of my personal human growth, right? They service my particular interest in pop culture. And I'd, you know, suddenly close the computer with a dazed look on my face at around 2 or 3 a.m. And that was probably not a healthy way of going about my life. So one of the reasons why I wanted an internet filter is that after a certain time at night, my computer says, you no longer have access to the internet right now, go to bed. It doesn't actually say that, but I'm saying, meaning that's one of the reasons for me that was useful. So yes, on a deeper level, should I have the inner strength that we strive for to always have the goal of life so clearly emblazoned in our minds? How could I possibly waste a second on Hevle Olam Hazeh? How could I do it? I'm a loser, that's the answer. What can I do? I don't have it in my mind all the time. Right? I mean, like, I'm not the Eved Hashem that I should be. So yes, do I want to keep working every single day to be clearer in the forefront of my mind why I'm here and what I should be doing in my Avodas Hashem? 100%. Until that day comes when I become a chassid and a parish mamish and kemalachei asharet, right? When that day comes, hopefully before 120 if I'm lucky, right? So then I can get rid of my internet filter because I won't need it. Until that time comes, I'd rather go to sleep and have a good day tomorrow. And also learn Torah in the morning and not sleep late and go to the latest minute and have a less time to have morning Seder. Like, is it bad? Am I a bad person for bypassing the issue? Does it address the issue? No. Do I need to keep addressing the issue? I am. But this at least keeps me on the straight and narrow to better address the issue and not be bleary-eyed the next day every time I come to Midrashah. I really miss those articles about my favorite comic book superheroes. But you know what? I've moved on in life. And it's okay. What?
Hashtag, what's your old email?
Access875, yeah. I'm saying, like, you know, so I recognize that was something that I wasn't, that I didn't have the internal strength to overcome. The internet is a really funny thing. It has a great way of turning your mind off and then, like, fast-forwarding time. So, okay, so I found a way around it. So two things. One is I have that, and second of all, I've blocked that site. There's nothing technically inappropriate on that site. I block that site because I know if I go on that site, I will inevitably spend hours on that site. Inevitably, don't have the internal fortitude to beat it yet. So my answer to your question, that was a long answer to a short question, but you're asking practically speaking, I think that both are good. And you have to know where you're at in any particular midah or any particular negative habit at any particular point in time. It's very personal.
I feel like also halakha kind of operates that way in terms of like some of the gedarim that are put in place by like the rabbanan. So like just maybe in terms of Shabbos or things like that, or like Shomer Negiah, like, you know, maybe they don't expect us to like always in certain situations have like that sudden strength of character to be able to like withhold from something. So they enact certain gedarim so that like kind of like you're saying with the chain of action that we're able to identify things beforehand and put a stop to it so we don't even come close to like the actual problem.
100%. I mean, Shomer Negiah is not a geder, Durabanan. Shomer Negiah is an Isser Duresh that's possibly a... And Isser Yarek Vali Avor, just to clarify. Just to be clear. Yes. I just wanted, if you said, I just wanted to make sure that's, I wouldn't have clarified that otherwise. That's A. But B is, yes, certain other Gedarim, certain Gedarim Durabanan are definitely things that that would be in place to make sure that, a Gedar Durabanan would say to not, for people of opposite genders, not to touch. Not derech chiba.
Okay.
Right. Rambam says you're an idiot if you do that. He actually says that. That's his words. He says you're an idiot if you do that because it's going to eventually lead to something. Okay, that's the Rambam. He says, you know, don't, that's a geder. Right? So that's to make sure that you don't come to touch derech chiba, which will inevitably lead to mixed dancing. But like, the idea is that yes, there are gedarim that would pull you farther away. Now again, in the same thing like Bracha was saying, the goal in life is to think about why doesn't God want physical contact between the sexes that's not within the context of marriage? That's a really important question to ask. That's a really important question to have an answer to. And the more that answer becomes real to me, or becomes real to anybody else. Let's talk about Reuven for a second, right? Mm-hmm. Reuven can have two things. Reuven can say, every time I see a girl that I'm attracted to, I'm going to turn around and walk in the opposite direction because I can't control myself. Hopefully, Reuven's goal will be to get to a point where it is, in fact, in his mind, he's going, I don't want to do that because it's somehow intrinsically anti-everything that Judaism is about, which it is. But until I get there, I'm going to, like, not go to the beach. For lots of other reasons also. But I'm not going to go to the beach. I'm feeling like that's a bad move for my Sunday afternoon activity. Mm-hmm. So both are legitimate. Both are legitimate. Questions, thoughts, comments? Good? Pretty good. Okay. Surprising, but okay. Good. So let's go forward. V'davar zeh hodi'unu zichonam livracha ba'omram. This was taught to us by our sages when they said, Noach lo la'adam shelo nivra. It was better off for a person that they not be created. But, b'di'eved, v'achshav shenivra yifash b'ish ma'asav. But now that we've been created, meaning the extreme example, this statement that's being stated by Chazal is meant to mean. I mean, it's meant literally because Chazal should never just be assumed to be speaking in exaggerations. But I'm saying the strength with which that's said by Chazal is because, like we talked about before, our souls don't belong here. We don't want to be here. We want to be in spiritual sublime place and not in the lowliness of this world. So it's better for man not to have been created because when we're created, we have the opportunity to sin. That's a legitimate fact. To rebel against God, there's nothing worse than that. So, Chazal say, better not to be created, but we have to deal with reality as it is. We were created, and if we're created, therefore, v'achshav shenivra, yifash pesh b'ma'asav, examine one's deeds, one should examine one's deeds, v'ika d'amre, yimash mesh b'ma'asav, and there are those who instead say they should scrutinize their actions. So says the Ramchal, very nice, what's the difference between examining and scrutinizing? So much so that they're needed, so that somebody's like, no. Not examine, scrutinize. And you're like, thanks, the Thoris, but like, what does that mean? So, says the Ramchal, V'tir'eh, sh'shtei lishonot sh'tei azharot tzavot u'moilot ma'ot. These two different words are two different warnings, and both are incredibly lofty in being able to help us. Kineh, ha'pishpush b'ma'asim, hu lachakor al'klal ha'ma'asim u'lhidbonin bo. Examining one's deeds is investigating the totality of our actions and contemplating them. Are there things that we're doing in general that we should not be doing? Which are not going according to the mitzvot of Hashem and His decrees. Because anything that we're doing that's not Ratzon Hashem, that's an avira, one should eliminate it from the world. So one is, what stuff do I do? Is it good? Is it bad? If it's bad, let's get rid of it. That's yifash pesh. I've eliminated my negative actions. What's left? What's left is the Eitz Das Tov Ra that we've been talking about in the Midrashah extensively. And that's the second layer, which is what? With that introduction, anybody see where he's going to take it next?
Within what you can do. Like, there's a phrase you use that I forget. But like, like separating yourself within what you can do.
No, not kash shechav mutar lecha.
Yeah, that.
Okay, sort of, but related to discussions that we've had in Mitzvah Sharim in Bereishis.
It was a question.
What would be the next thing? What would be a different type of examination? I've scrutinized all my deeds and I've removed all of the negative actions. I've identified them and removed them. What's left?
See what the reason for the good things that you do.
Excellent. What are the nature of the motivations even within the good actions? Conflicted motivations, the conversation we sort of had on the Shabbaton, right? That's the second piece. Again, everything keeps unfolding back, because when we, like we talked about, for those who were here yesterday, in the sort of explosive conversation we had yesterday, that the goal of the Midrashah here is to give the overarching principle, so it's not surprising that they're going to keep on unfolding through the different things that we're learning. So the second phase, what he says is, the deeper phase of what he says is, which we talked about extensively in Bereishis, in Parshat Bereishit, Ach hamishmush hu hachakira afilu b'maasim tovim atzmam, is investigating even those good things themselves. Lachakor v'lirot hayesh b'inyanam pniya asher lo tova, is there within those actions any sort of leaning in a way that's not good? Or is there any aspect that needs to be removed or destroyed? Is there any negative motivation even within my positive actions? Is there any selfish motivations even within my positive actions? Is there any hurtful motivations even within my positive actions? Why am I doing the good things that I'm doing? Am I doing them to tend to my ego? Am I doing them to feel good about myself? Am I doing them to one-up somebody else? Am I doing them to attain a position of power? Am I doing them to attain kavod? Why am I doing those things? And to critically examine even the good actions for the conflicting motivations that may be hidden underneath those actions themselves. Bracha.
I don't think that's dangerous, though. Because, like, I think if someone decides that they're doing something for the wrong reason, they might stop doing it altogether.
Could be, but I'd like to think not.
No, like, I mean, like, I think if you think, oh, I'm really only doing this because I'm selfish, you'll stop doing it because you'll associate it with yourself.
So the idea is just for the contemplation, is recognizing, wow, this is something that I do for complicated motivations, and I want to work on myself that if this is something that I do, to make sure that I do it with the proper motivations and to start working on my motivations. The Ramchal here just seems to not assume that a person would go, wow, I have selfish motivations when I learn Torah, so this whole Limud Torah thing's not for me. Mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma, but as we talked about in other circumstances, mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma doesn't, I don't think, personally, my understanding of the phrase doesn't mean if you keep doing things that are good, lo lishma, eventually you'll do them lishma. To me it means no. It's saying I'm willing to continue to do these things lo lishma because my goal is to continue to purify the action and to reach a place of lishma. But without the work, of course, it's not going to come. But I don't think his assumption is that generally speaking, people would not stop doing something because the motivations were not in place. Could be that they might. I'm fairly certain that I know who this story is about, but I don't remember which Chassidish Rebbe it is, so I'm not going to attribute it to the wrong person. But one of the Chassidish Rebbeim at the end of their lives was on his deathbed, and they were pushing him to say Shema at the end of his life, and he refused. And he said, Rebbe, you went through your whole life being Kaddish V'Tahor. You're about to die. Why wouldn't you say Shema? He says, I know that there's a part of me that wants to say Shema to make sure that people can tell the story that when I died on my deathbed, the last thing I did was say Shema. So you know what? Not saying Shema. So yeah, meaning you can also have a point where you say, like, I want to overcome that Yitzhar in a way where I'm going to not do it because of the conflicting motivation. It makes me think that that's Kutzk. I'm not 100% sure. It makes me think that's a Kutzker. It sounds like a Kutzker story.
Oh.
But the idea there, yes, I guess theoretically you could end up with those moments where you might want to cease doing something. But again, I would say the same thing. The goal would be to, even if you say I'm not doing this right now because of the conflicting motivations, still the goal would be to eventually come to do the action again with the proper motivation. So whether you cease to do the action with the goal of doing it with the right intentions, or you keep doing the action with the goal of shifting the intentions, the goal is to keep moving forward.
But the second one is preferable.
I would recommend it, despite the Kutzker. Yes.
Okay.
I would recommend not, you know, like, keep davening, keep learning, keep doing chesed, keep lighting Shabbos candles, good things. You know, even if there are conflicting motivations, but to recognize and do the hitbonenut, that there are conflicting motivations here and to try and work past it. Mm-hmm.
In the words yefash pesh and yemash mesh, where does he, like, how does he define the two? Like, where does he get the translations of the words as these two things?
You should ask him. I'm not, and I don't know the answer. That's a great question. I don't know. I'll try to look into it. But I don't have access to the Ramchal either, so I'll do the best that I can. And there aren't many commentaries on this version because it's relatively newly brought to light. But I will take a look. Tov. The other example that I wanted to give was, you're talking about if you should stop doing an action because it has negative or conflicting motivations. Tov, don't just keep doing it.
keep doing it and try, and the goal is to continue to try.
One example. There we go. There was an example that jumped to mind was for me, it was a big challenge to figure out. Again, these are things that, again, require hibbonanut. But I'm giving you these examples because, like, you can think about anything. And the goal is, as he said in the previous chapter, is to think. The answer to zihirut is hibbonanut. Always. And this is something which I still struggle with, especially now that I'm a rabbi, which is so annoying. Which is, when I go to shul, where do I daven? This is one of the worst ones. Where do I daven? So my rabbi davens in the back. Always. His shita is, you always stay in the back. You don't think you deserve to be in the front, no kavod, no nothing. You stay in the back, and you stay with the people who think they deserve to be in the back, and you be mechazik the people in the back, you be in the back. Like, he's very big on to being in the back. And so for a while I was davening in the back. The only problem was, on the other side, I tend to like to actually say the words when I daven. It's a thing. I like to say the words I'm davening when I daven. However, in many of the shuls that I was at least davening in at the time, for sure, if you actually broke the deep, hovering silence in shul during davening, which to me is just odd in and of itself, people would yell at you for interrupting their kavana. So if I was in the back, then I was interrupting people on the sides of me and in front of me. If I was in the front, then I felt like I was going to look like a bal gaiva. And I was like stuck. I was like, I didn't know what to do. And I wanted to honor my rabbi, and I wanted to follow in his footsteps and stand in the back. But I also didn't want to interrupt people, so I wanted to stand in the front. But I didn't want to stand in the front because then it looks like I'm a bal gaiva. Then now I'm davening loud because I say all the words. So I'm saying all the words, and I'm standing in the front, and now I'm a bal gaiva, and I'm causing problems there. So I didn't know what to do. So I had to do a deep, deep hibbonanut to figure out, where do I daven in shul? What are my motivations? It was not a simple answer to that question. It took me a long time to figure it out.
Can I ask?
You can ask offline, okay. But it doesn't matter what I chose. The answer, what's important is what you choose based on your hibbonanut. There are other examples, but there's that then. So I'm saying every point in life is an opportunity to check what your motivations are. And again, the answer isn't like throw your hands up in the air and stop davening, or being like, you know what, this is too complicated, I'm just davening b'yichidus for the rest of my life. Like those aren't legitimate answers to the question. The goal is to struggle within the mitzvah to make the mitzvah better, not to avoid the mitzvah. Okay. Tov. Getting worried about the people who aren't speaking up. Okay. Good. Achamishmush. I believe you might have read this a second ago, but okay. The mishmush is an investigation of the actual ma'asim tovim themselves. Where we did read this a second ago. Asher lo tova o izachilek rashi tzrich lasser uliva arom. V'harei is what we're up to. Ze kimimashmesh beveger lifchon hatov v'chazak hu o chalash uvaloi. This is like, you could say that maybe this is an answer to your question, Sema? Where it was, no. Which one of you asked which one? Why he used mishmush? Yeah. I was not compelled by, and I thought about it when I read this line, and I wasn't sure that it was enough of an answer, but your answer may lie in this line. He says that it's like feeling a beged to determine whether it's strong or weak or worn out. Good or bad, or strong or weak or worn out. So I guess maybe that's taking something which you know that there isn't, because it's using your hand and feeling it. That's more of an examination of something which already is. I don't know. I don't have a good enough answer, which is why I don't want to bank on that. But that's a line to unearth a little bit to see if maybe the answer to your question is there. Kaini mashmesh b'masav. So too one should, you know, deeply and refinely look at carefully one's actions. Livchon b'tzivam b'tzachlit ha'avchanat yishe'er zach v'naki. To look at their nature to see if they are in truth pure and clean. Nimsa, what comes out of this klal, and again, that's a hot word in the Ramchal, right? Whenever you see the word klal, that's always a big word in the Ramchal. He always wants to put things back into their big general principles. Is that still up there? Am I pointing to nothing?
Yeah.
It is lovely, okay. Tov. Nimsa, klal amida azot. Lihiyot, what's the general principle here? Liot adam me'ayin al ma'asav, to examine one's actions, umifakeach al drachav, and to look at one's ways, shelo laniach la'atzmo hergel ra umidara, not to allow for the remains of any bad habits or any bad actions or any bad midot. Kol shekin avira u'pesha, and aside from that, obviously needs to remove anything negative. But to also make sure that one, even in one's good things, that A, to remove all the negative, and B, to make sure that even the one's positive actions that one's taking, that they're all in the right place. Good. Okay. Ukvar zacharti lecha ze betchilat dvarai. I already mentioned this at the beginning of my words when I spoke to you earlier. Shani ro'eh tzorech la'adam shemedakdik v'shokel drachav, that a person needs to be very careful about and to weigh out one's ways, davar b'yom yomo, every single day, kasocharim hagdolim asher yifalsu tamid kol iskehem lema'an lo yitkalkalu, like merchants, great merchants, who are constantly assessing their actions, their business transactions, in order that they not make a mistake. In the second version, the footnote in your books, I think in the English ones also, points out that there's an extra line in the second version that he wrote. There's no reason why we can't draw from both. And he says that after this concept in Seder HaPrakim, he adds in the line, again, it's probably in your footnotes, so it's in my footnotes, Beseder HaPrakim Nosaf, V'yikba itim v'shaot l'zeh, a person needs to set aside time for this. It doesn't happen automatically, right? It's not going to happen on the bus ride that you're no longer taking. I mean, like, where you still are taking, but now that you have your iPhones, then that time is not just going to... It's not going to happen on its own. And he was talking about this again, pre-iPhones. So a person needs to actually actively set aside time every single day just to think about, what did I do today? What was good? What wasn't good? What was good, and why was it good? And why was what I did good that was good? Could it be better? It requires time. It requires hit bone anut. And hit bone anut requires time. It's such an important thing to add into life. He says that a person needs to establish times to do this. That his weighing out of these things should not be something which happens by happenstance. It shouldn't be temporary. It should be something which he establishes very strongly. Because it will produce tremendous results. Keeping a journal at the end of the day where you take 5 minutes and just write down a few things you did say that were good, a few things that were bad, and a few things that were complicated. Taking a few minutes to do that in the quiet, I think writing happens to be a great way to do it, but also sitting down or thinking about it, making sure that there is that time, that let's say you do have a certain thing in your life, like I very much treasure my walk from my house to the college, I get 15 minutes, and I try not to schedule phone meetings during that time, so that way I can just kind of like first take stock, where am I at, what am I doing, and like, what's next? That's where I take stock in my day even. But like I don't immediately put my headphones on. I don't immediately make a phone call. Like I sit down, I'm like, what's on deck for today? What do I need to do? And what's the best way to go about my day to day? Like it takes time to think these things out. Don't just keep running on autopilot. Wherever the time is, that's not even what he's talking about. That time is a fail. What he wants me to do is to plan my day out at some point, and on my walk to work, make sure that the only thing I'm thinking about is what have I done today so far? What was good? What was bad? What could be better? In a way that's empowering, in a way that when you do that, you're then putting yourself in a place where you're able to recognize, wow, I've done amazing things today, and I want to keep doing those. Wow, that was not what I wanted to be doing, and what caused that, and how do I think about chain analysis? How do I think about the deep root or the cause for why I did that, and how can I start to move past those things?
You don't really feel that in school, though. So.
What?
You don't really feel that in school so much.
Like, feel what in school so much?
Feel that feeling in school, because you're not really like helping the world, you're just kind of like...
Well, no, you're still doing these votes.
I know, but I'm saying like...
You came to me with a question yesterday about a murky issue that you weren't sure and wanted to know how to better interact with school in a way that was b'derech HaTorah. That requires hit bonenut.
Right, but I don't know.
Don't sell yourself short. You were mitbonenet. You were mitbonen. You thought about it, and you came with a question. But if a person doesn't think, they can keep going out their lives even in school. You know? What do I do if it's yontif? Who do I take notes from? Can I take notes? Do I go to class and not take notes? Requires hit bonenut. That's school. How do I represent Judaism in my classroom? When we were talking about Shem Hashem. Wow, this is really important. What happens if I'm snacking in class? And we talked about, well, maybe it's worth contemplating waiting until there's a natural break to have the halavai 15 seconds to say the shahakol. And to wait to say the shahakol. That's hit bonenut. And those are things that come up in everyday life. You know? How do I work it out in my day to make sure that if it's important to wash your hands before tefillah, that if I'm teaching Hilchos Netilas Yadayim in my pre-Mincha Mishneh Berurah Chabura, to make sure to remember to put in my day to wash my hands before I teach, before I daven. That's incredibly hypocritical for me to teach about the importance of washing hands before you daven and then get up, go daven, and not wash my hands. That took a lot of people. I had to totally rethink my schedule in order to do that. And I'm still so mechan kulos, because it's still hard for me to run all the way back to the... You know, if anybody's ever seen me in the Hillel, I don't think I'm ever not running. Right? So, like, to have the time to run all the way to the back of the Hillel to wash my hands with the cup first before I get to the Beit Midrash, and I'm already 5 minutes late, because in the Chabur, that's only 20 minutes long in the first place, so I can make sure to dive in on time at 1:20, because Shkia is so real. This is what goes out of my head. You understand? Like, these have nothing to do with... You're in school, so what? What?
I wasn't referring to that. I'm referring to the fact that we don't feel like we're helping the world being school.
But this is not about helping the world. This is about how... You don't realize you are helping the world when you're doing Torah and mitzvos.
Makes sense.
You're helping the world with everything that you do with Yitbonenut, that you're bringing more of a Kadosh Baruch Hu into your actions, everything that you do wherever you are. That's Avodas Hashem. That's Tikkun Olam. You don't have to go off to Africa and save the world in order to do Tikkun Olam. You don't actually need to build... It's good, but you don't actually have to build the hut in wherever in order to do Tikkun Olam.
Okay.
But every mitzvah you do, every time you have Kavana and Shem Hashem when you say a bracha in your classroom, you're doing a Tikkun. You're doing a Avodas Hashem. That's very real.
This also, like, sort of in response, this is something that I've thought of a lot in myself. When you're in school and you're preparing for a job, you're working towards serving Hashem because you'll be able to make money to do mitzvot. You'll be able to help people through your job. So, like, that's just another way to look at it also.
100%. I find that when I've spoken to students, I find that looking at school as kind of like a hechsher mitzvah tends to be a really depressing way to look at 3 years of your life, because it's just really long as a preparation for a mitzvah, even though I think it's also true. So I like to also find meaning within that time itself, so as not to lose that time.
I don't know, this is just something
I'm saying it is helpful for some people. For most students that have spoken to me, the reaction tends to be like, great, I'll work and support my family 3 years from now, but like, so what, now just like, whatever? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, not whatever, it's very important. Now's the time. There is no other time yet. Okay? Let's do one more paragraph and then we'll call it a day. We were going to do two shir back to back. We're instead going to do half of one shir. But this is good. This is the way it's meant to be. We're going to have to reevaluate how much of a Mesel Shirim we're going to get through, but the conversations here are more important than you can read the words on your own, and you even have your Hebrew English edition, so you don't need me at all. So I think the group discussions are more important. Ukvar zacharti lachazeh b'chlat v'ari, we just read that, tov. Our rabbis have already taught us the importance of this cheshbon, of this of reflectively calculating. I mean, calculation is the wrong word. How does he translate cheshbon?
Calculation.
He says calculation here?
Oh, no.
Reckoning. Good. That's a nice way of saying calculation. I'm saying calculation. It's a great way of again, I would keep using the word hitbonenut. That they say explicitly that one needs to think about, that one needs to make a reckoning of their actions. This is what it says. Alkin yomru hamoshlim biyisra. This is based on the pasuk alkin yomru hamoshlim bo cheshbon, which is toward the end of Bamidbar and Parsha. Balak or Chukat, I'm forgetting. It's toward the end of Bamidbar. There's a beautiful poem there toward the end, which is very kind of needs a lot of explanation. So it says, "Alkinim ruah moshlim bo cheshbon." So that could mean anything. So one of the ways that Chazal or Dorish this pasuk is "Alkinim ruah moshlim bet itzram." Therefore, those who truly rule their yetzer, they say, "Bo cheshbon, come and make a reckoning. Come and make an accounting. Come and contemplate your deeds." The reason why it's al pidrash is because moshlim here most likely means on a pshat level, poets, because it's a poem that's about to come. But the way that Chazal understand it is when those who want to be moshe, who want to rule over their yitzer, they say bo cheshbon, come and make a reckoning, bo unechashev cheshbono shalom, come and contemplate a reckoning of the world, hefseid mitzvah keneged schara, how much a mitzvah will cost you in relation to what you will gain by doing that mitzvah, uschar avira, and what a avira will gain you, kinega hefseda, in accordance with what you will ultimately lose by doing that avira. Contemplate critically the results of your actions, the positives and the negatives, the pleasure that you gain in olam hazeh versus the spiritual pain of olam haba. The pleasure in olam hazeh of doing Kadosh Baruch Hu's ratzon and the self-fulfillment versus not being able to do that thing that you thought would also be fun, that you thought would also be enjoyable, that you thought would also be a good thing to do. Meaning, weigh out what are the positives and negatives of each action that I'm taking, and what are the ultimate ramifications of the actions that I'm taking. וזה, כי זאת העיצה האמיתית, לא יוכלו להתית אותה ולא לראות המיטתה, אלא אותם שכבר יצאו מתחת יצרם ומשלו בם. It's something very deep here, that this advice has to come from the Moshlim B'Yitzram. It has to come from those who already have control over their Yitzer, dominance over their Yitzer. This true advice cannot come except from those people who see things in truth, which are those who have already left from under the hand of the Yetzer Hara and rule over it. Because the Yetzer Hara can take us and distort our perception of reality. I can't truly decide if an action is good if I'm being driven by my Yetzer Hara. I can't truly discern whether or not something is clear to me if I'm driven by my inner desires. It's Efshar, it's impossible. It's impossible. Once one already engages in their Yetzer Hara, it's impossible to see the world clearly. So first we're Moshel on our Yetzer, and then we can make the Cheshbon. Then you make the Cheshbon. There was somebody who once gave me unbelievable advice when I was in high school. You got the context. Gave me unbelievable advice. They said in certain areas of life, when you're struggling with your Yetzer Hara, whatever the struggle Yetzer Hara might be, this individual said, decide for yourself. He said, what you're up to, where you're at, and draw a line in the sand. Draw a line in the sand. This is what I'm willing to do, whether it's right or wrong is irrelevant, whether there's things in there that are averas is irrelevant. Draw your line in the sand, and never ever move that line in the sand when you're in a moment where you're thinking, when you're in a moment where it's happening. Meaning, let's go back to our non-kosher example. Let's say you're like, I'm willing to eat in a non-kosher restaurant as long as it's only salad, parentheses, which is vadayasur. I'm willing to eat only salad, and I'm not going to touch the meat or the fish or anything else. And you're in the restaurant, and you're like, that fish looks pretty good. And really, they make it on there, and you start making cheshbonos. But where are you in? You're already tachat the moshel of the yetzer. His unbelievable recommendation, which wherever it applies in your life, I highly recommend it also, and it served me well throughout life. When you figure out where you're at, draw your line in the sand, and never ever move that line in the moment. Only when you're outside of the moment, only when you're outside of the restaurant, only when you're back at home and the food's not sitting in front of you, you're not smelling it and desperately want that food. That's what he's saying here. When you're under the tachat, the shilton ha-yetzer, it's impossible to see clearly enough to make a conscious, thoughtful decision, because your yetzer will win. So one etzah about that is to make sure that when you make your lines, that's just, again, this is not in the book, but it should be in a book, which is to draw those lines very carefully beforehand and never ever move a line in the heat of the moment. I can at least say that it serviced me well. I think it was good advice. So, but he's saying here, but why is he saying that from this line, which is that you can't possibly discern truth under the rule of the Yitzhar? Ki mishu adayin chavush v'masar Yitzro, one who's trapped in the prison of their Yitzhar, eini navro otamet hazot, their person cannot see the truth with their eyes. They didn't yachol hakiran, can't recognize it. Kayitzer misameet anav mamash, the Yitzhar can blind a person mamish. It's like a person who's walking in the dark where there are obstacles that he simply can't see. In terms of the ways in which we stumble through the darkness of this world and how to prepare ourselves to beware of stumbling through the darkness of this world, we'll pick up with next Tuesday.